Hey, welcome back to SwitchCast Live. I'm your host, Doug Tabbitt, founder of Switch Cars, and SwitchCast is the automotive-related podcast where we're searching for the truth and the humor in the car industry. We've got lots of both tonight. That's right, here at SwitchCast, it is automotive wisdom with a side of sarcasm, or vice versa, depending on how much pre-gaming we've done. With me is Tyler Sanders, co-host, official supplier of Banter, and the real radio voice here.
I try. I was going to try to do like some really deep voice and realized I'd just make a fool of myself. Haven't had enough whiskey yet.
You can't do Ed Bullion. I'm sorry.
I wish I could.
I think I did like mimic Ed Bullion on a phone call one time and somebody thought it actually was him.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Somebody that knew him too. Yeah. So last week, a highly popular episode, we talked about sketchy transporters, one in particular, but we learned some lessons from that one and what we could learn. But I missed an amazing opportunity for a joke last week.
Is it going to be better now that it's percolated for a bit?
Yes. Okay. And it's not a coffee joke either.
Who?
However, the joke is decanted over the
week. Oh,
This is proof that while many of you may think I'm hilarious and genius, one, I don't pre-write all of my jokes, and two, if I did, they'd be way better, because this one is brilliant. So we were talking about Elegant Motorsports and Signature Motorsports and how they're essentially one in the same company. One of them got shut down, and then they started the other one because they were still in the transport business, but they had been shut down by the DOT, Transport Authority, whatever, had their thing revoked, had a lawsuit against them. So, you know, let's just cover our tracks, start a new company, start from scratch, probably same trucks, the whole deal. Anyway, but one thing they had in common was their registered agent for their LLC was Lenny Juras. And I'm amazed. I mean, just there's so much opportunity for jokes here. But the best one is if you use this company to transport your car and they damage it, Juras is on the line.
Oh.
And I will say this too. Many people who are familiar with the transport industry alleged that this shady trucker in question was a foreigner. Now, I'm not going to profile here, but it's a reasonable assumption that Juras is from Djibouti.
Okay. Are we starting here?
Yes, we're starting here. All uphill from here. I thought it was hilarious, too, that the video, which was entitled Stop Using Transport Brokers, somehow inspired half a dozen transport brokers to solicit my business through social media.
Really?
Yes.
Like, no, we really got good trucks.
Oh, no, we're different. I'm like, maybe, but no. I've heard that before. I've heard it before, and maybe out there is some good transport broker, but most of them are all the same. Before we put this issue to bed, I have one more question to all the people who said I shouldn't knock a transport driver because his equipment is beat up. And there are all sorts of analogies which were false comparisons. But I would ask him this. If an Uber driver showed up in an Altima with the DUI plates, or party plates as we call them here in Ohio, missing bumpers, banged up fenders, smashed headlights and taillights, and the mirror hanging off, would you get in?
Absolutely not.
Would you get in? Same deal as putting your car in a truck like this. Like, who cares if he's maybe a reputable driver? If he's hit friggin' everything with his truck except the lottery, like, you don't put your car in there. Yeah.
Could have been like the Altima that we saw on the way into the shop tonight, where like the wheels on the left hand side of the car were just like going to wobble off. I don't know what was going on, but it was not. I stayed.
They were doing the death wobble. Yes. For sure. That wheel bearing and or lug nuts were not long for this world. one commenter just recently on this video, it's still going great. He asked me to read the good reviews because I read all the bad ones, which there weren't any good ones. But a very astute commenter had a wise word. And he responded to that, and he said, quote, if they had a GT500 stolen while in their possession and can't even answer their phone, good reviews don't matter. And that's it. That's it, right? It's yeah. We're going to move on. Let's see. I want to be careful here. I don't want to celebrate because this is not something that should be celebrated. There's a lot of people that have been wronged. A lot of hurt people, a broken person, can't spell broken without broke in this case, but there is a Bible verse. I'm not going to go all religious on you people, but there is a Bible verse that says, do not rejoice when your enemy falls. When he stumbles, do not let your heart take pleasure, whatever it is, or else the Lord will see and disapprove and turn his wrath away from him. So, there is an element of having compassion and or grace for when people get what's coming to them, but also there's still this sense of justice, right? Of vindication where like, okay, I called this. I warned people not to deal with this guy. He threatened to sue me because I was warning people not to deal with him it's defamation. I'm like, it's not defamation. This is true. This is absolutely true. Yes, I don't want people to do business with you because you're probably going to scam them too, right? We were talking specifically about Charles Harris with Direct Auto Tennessee. And somebody sent me a screenshot. He has been arrested.
Oh.
And sued by a bank. And he got a $350,000 judgment against him from one person that he scammed out of a Lamborghini. Good luck collecting on that judgment, but he's got some stuff coming against him. But anyway, Altra, I think it is, Federal Credit Union, is suing Charles Harris and Direct Auto Tennessee in, I believe it was Montgomery County, Tennessee. Unfortunately, the court search for that county doesn't give us any details. We can't pull up the docket. We can't get any details like some other places, especially Ohio, where you can just look at essentially the whole case, all the motions, all the parties, everything. You can download the docket and all the filings. So we don't know the details of it, but we can certainly guess based on what we've covered in a past episode. For those of you who missed it, go back to Downfall of a Dealer episode, but it is a dealership that has done like so many others where they mismanage themselves out of money and then mismanage themselves out of a lot of clients' money and banks' money as well. That's the cliff notes. Let's see. So he has also been arrested. He has been arrested for contempt, though. It was not for any particular charge related to his wrongdoings, but he was arrested for contempt about 2 days after this lawsuit from the bank was filed. So again, no details in the system, only his mugshot on the sheriff's Facebook page or it's Clarksville Arrests Facebook page.
Yes.
So very well could be that he just, didn't show up for court or something like that. That could be a contempt charge, or he could have been saying things like he said to me when he was in court. Anyway, so it's probably back out. It's $5,000 bond. Pretty easy to come up with that from other people's money. it's a bad situation. Bad situation all around. But we called it. We got a lot of heat for calling it, but it was true. It was true. Alex Choi, famous automotive YouTuber, has also been arrested on federal charges for attaching an incendiary device to an aircraft. Now, no, he's not committing terrorist acts here. He was firing fireworks off of a helicopter for one of his crazy videos. Now, the real issue here is that he didn't get a permit. That's why he got arrested and charged with this. I think it was like a year ago he made the video. So,
so this could have been done if there was a permit involved. Yeah. Just launching fireworks out of a helicopter at a car.
I mean, they do crazy stuff in the movies all the time. So,
yeah, that's true.
It probably was a lot of hoops to jump through. I would imagine he may have looked into it and just said, well, screw that. And it was probably much more expensive because you probably have to close down roads and all sorts of other things. But the main point of it, he wasn't arrested for doing what he did. He was arrested for doing what he did without a permit. So this is one of the few times where asking forgiveness versus asking permission is not advisable. Big consequences here.
Yikes. Yeah, I saw somewhere that it can be up to a 10-year prison sentence, which is a lot.
I have a feeling he has quite good lawyers. And, you know, there's no real victim here. He was out in the boonies when he did it. And, you know, I don't know. The whole thing really bothers me. Because, like, I understand that they want to keep people safe. But seriously, like, who was hurt? If anyone did get hurt, it was somebody in his crew that signed up to do this, right? Like, go after the dang street takeovers. People are actually getting hurt there.
Yes.
Or actually don't. That's a nice, like, natural selection happening. But most of them are stolen cars also. So, like, there are victims there. There are people who are missing their cars. There are insurance companies. And then there's insurance claims, which affects every other person and their, you know, their ability to afford car insurance and stuff. So, like, nobody was hurt or impacted by Alex Choi firing stuff off of his helicopter. Nobody.
Well, it doesn't appear like there was much of a risk. If it was truly in the middle of the middle of nowhere, the article from ABC7 that I've got up says law enforcement believes the video was shot on the El Mirage dry lake bed. So literally nobody was there.
Yeah.
So it's not even.
And they're fireworks. Like,
we do launch those all the time for a lot of reasons.
Right.
They're not pointed at anything. Right. Well, they might be, but it's not on purpose.
Well,
you know, I'm just going to stop. A lot of things happen with fireworks. This is probably
right. A lot of drunk rednecks do a lot of things with fireworks. This was probably highly controlled, and it's just a waste of our justice system. An absolute waste. Yeah. Speaking of famous arrests, Scottie Scheffler, who is a golfer, so this isn't car related, but it is because he was arrested for doing something with a car. So, like I said, tangentially related. I'm sure many of you have heard where he was arrested going into a PGA tournament for allegedly dragging a cop, which is a huge deal. And he was charged with, I think, second degree assault on a police officer, which is also a big deal.
Big X.
So there's a number of issues with the arrest, most notably that nobody turned on their body cameras in violation of police policy. Watching the hearings was pretty ridiculous as well. But we're not going to bore you with all of that. The long and short of it is that all charges were dismissed. However, more body cam footage was released after the fact. So after he was arrested and everything important was already done, these officers turned on their body cams. And so there was like testimony from Scheffler right after the arrest. And it turns out he did actually drive away intentionally and drag the police officer.
Ooh.
But it, you know, by his own admission, but it was because he didn't know that it was a police officer. The police officer was wearing like those orange vests and it wasn't labeled on the front, on the back. It had LMPD traffic, but it was like supposedly covering his badge and stuff. So he thought he was just directing traffic because he didn't know about the accident that was nearby. And the cop was giving him orders and reached into Scotty's car and grabbed his arm, which I've been in this situation before, too, with a traffic cop on a power trip. And it does really kind of chap my rear end. Now, if it's a cop doing it, it's like, OK, just submit and deal with maybe the violations of constitutional rights later, right? Because reaching into your car may be a violation of the Fourth Amendment, you know, whatever. You figure that out later. You don't resist. You don't drive away and take the cop with you. But when somebody he thought wasn't a cop reaches into his car and grabs him, he freaked out and said, I'm driving away, and left.
Oof.
He drove like 10 yards and then stopped. And then the cop banged on his window and went to arrest him. And Scotty's like, are you a cop? You know, he asked him then. So he had no clue. So interesting turn of events. Everything dismissed. Did drag the cop. Didn't know it was a cop. Just a whole messy situation. Yeah. I don't know if there's much to learn from that. But I can definitely see some of these ego trip traffic cops thinking that what they're doing is way more important than what it really is.
Well, these guys, like, they're told all the time, just bypass security, get to your... Because literally, when the cop asked him, like, hey, what are you doing? He was, his response is great. He said, I'm trying to get to my tee time, which for the number one golfer in the world, for that to be your answer to that question is awesome.
Right.
But the thing is, like, the cop rushed toward his car. And then after the fact, you have in the police report, the cop said, my pants, which were valued at $80, are torn beyond repair, which is just hysterical.
Well, he had to do that because one of the charges couldn't be, wouldn't be a charge unless there was property damage.
It's so funny, though, to read that line in an official police report is hysterical, objectively speaking.
But, like, I watch a lot of these cop videos, and that's what they do. They, like, say, okay, literally, they'll stand around and they'll go, what can we charge this person with? Now, a lot of times it's a real criminal and they're going, okay, we need to get them off the streets. What is applicable here? But you watch some of these videos and you go, okay, they're just like looking for stuff. It's like, oh, I scraped my hand. Oh, assault on a police officer. Great. Put that one down. So I feel like the pants thing was kind of one of those things. Like, well, we can't get them for criminal mischief unless there's property damage. So, ooh, pants are ripped. Irreparably.
It's so funny. Like, granted, there was that fatal accident. That's tragic. Honestly, these guys probably had no idea what that happened. They don't know what's going on. They're just trying to get to their tee time. It's insane that they booked him, took a mugshot, did the whole thing, and no one at any point was like, you know, maybe the number one golfer in the world, maybe, like, we just misunderstood what's going on here. Like, they went through the whole process, which is just insane.
Yeah. And, like, he's just, by all accounts, a super nice guy. Like, he's got some of the best character and morals and stuff of a lot of those golfers. Like, that would be the last person that you would think would do something like that. So anyway, I like golf from a distance. I'm terrible at it. So this was interesting. And we were actually staying in a hotel right by the PGA Tour for a wedding, which was great wedding, but it was annoying because hotels were $300 to $400 a night for crappy hotels because of the PGA Tour. So everybody else at the hotel was going to the PGA Tour and we're watching this on the news like, oh man, this just happened right here.
Switchcast is brought to you by Boxcast. Boxcast is a live streaming company based in Cleveland, Ohio, and they serve broadcasters and viewers around the world. Their founders launched Boxcast back in 2013 with one purpose: to make people a part of the experience. So if you're looking to live stream your podcast, church service, car show, sporting event, wedding, or even your cannonball attempt, Boxcast is an easy and flexible live streaming platform for organizations. Boxcast is so easy that we're broadcasting this show with a phone. So head on over to switchcars.com/Boxcast to start your free trial.
What do we have for the shrewd negotiator this week, Tyler?
Oh my goodness, Doug. We've got something submitted by Zach D. from Facebook, of all places.
A lot of shrewd negotiating going on there.
There's some stuff. Let me tell you. So this is obviously a for sale ad. This is for a 2006 Mitsubishi Eclipse GT.
Ooh, boy.
It is orange, which is a good color for these. This is my least favorite Eclipse.
But so it's like a solar eclipse.
Ew. Well, no, wouldn't that be black? Because they're not, I don't know. Anyway.
Depends on which side of the moon you're on.
I guess that's true. Saved it. So the listing says, really good car, has brand new set of tires, body is good, paint is peeling, interior is clean, front seat has rip, only downside, the motor is blown, need to be towed out, do you have clean Texas title?
Wait, I thought it was a really good car.
I thought it was too.
God, I mean, it can't be. It's a Mitsubishi Eclipse.
Yeah.
We know those two things are mutually exclusive right there.
These third gen Eclipses aren't. This is third gen, isn't it?
I don't know.
I don't know. It's the weird bubbly ones.
It was the last gen, I think.
Yeah, whatever the last gen is. But yeah, for $2,000. And you got to pull it out of these weeds posted up in.
Yeah, the pictures were great.
Oh my goodness. I'm just now noticing in one of the photos.
All of the paint is peeling.
And it's all different colors.
And the grass is growing around it. You know, it reminds me of finding a car in Maine. Yeah. You know, the old joke, you know you're from Maine when you mow your car and you mow your lawn and you find a car.
Yeah.
You like mow your car too.
All of the hood and the doors and the left side of the car, it's all different colors and it's all peeling.
But it's a really good car.
Yeah. Body is good.
Body is good, and the title's clean.
And I like that the interior is clean, but the front seat has a rip.
I feel like that's a dubious claim, though, because if he says that is a really good car, if that's his definition of good, then title being clean to him might mean like it's a double salvage flood title.
True. I think we all know guys who are like, this car is so mint, and then it's got like rust around the like wheel wells and the interior is absolutely trashed. I'm like, what, do you need contacts? Do you need glasses? Like, what's going on?
Mark Spence.
I would not. We love you,
Mark. Not on cars he's selling. He gets really excited about cars he's buying. He's like, it's perfect. I'm like, what about that rust? Well, they all rust on the fenders.
Like, it's got 185,000 miles, Mark. What do you
right. do? If you like this show, please, wherever you're watching, hit the like button, subscribe to us, share it with your friends, leave a comment, leave a 5-star review. That helps the algorithms. Help other people find us. We would very much appreciate that. Speaking of 5-star reviews, we're going to talk about 1-star reviews in a little bit, but I do want to get to a couple more news pieces before we do that. The U.S. Department of Labor sued an auto shop who paid an ex-employee's final paycheck via a wheelbarrow full of pennies, and apparently they were covered in some oily substance, probably oil, because it's an auto shop. Now, the interesting thing is, it makes a great headline, but that's not why the auto shop was sued, because according to one news source, it is not actually illegal for them to pay him in pennies. It's the laws don't specify by which currency you have to pay your employees. But they made national news for this stunt, and then as a result of that, supposedly, they got sued by the Department of Labor for repeatedly not paying overtime. So there's a whole bunch of violations for not paying the overtime. So I think that just goes to show that if you're going to put yourself in the limelight and tick people off, make sure that your nose is clean on all counts. Don't go to a car show in a stolen charger. I mean, stolen car. 40th slip. I'm not sure why I said charger.
There's no connection. No connection. Yeah, that's just. I don't think that this shop was really in the business of doing things, you know, super by the, you know, upstanding. They wrote an expletive
why
on
is that,
this dude.
Tyler?
They wrote like they were like apparently they dumped these pennies on his driveway with the pay stub, wrote some expletive on it. So, of course, there could have been some like that's obviously internal strife that has nothing to do with the quality of work they do. But like it must have gotten really bad to get to this point.
Hmm.
I do like the subtitle of the article from The Drive that we've got that says there's a coin shortage in the U.S., but not in this Georgia driveway. Which this is from the article is from early 22. So there's not currently a coin shortage that I know about.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Speaking of wheelbarrows, a new land speed record has been set for a wheelbarrow.
What?
Want to guess the speed? It's motorized. I mean, they attach a motor to it and wheels and, you know, handlebars and stuff.
So somebody's like wrapped up in a wheelbarrow with like handlebars or something?
Kind of like kneeling behind it. Well, although I feel like it shouldn't count unless there's a load in a wheelbarrow, and even better, another person in it. Like, did you have a wheelbarrow as a kid?
Oh yeah.
Did you ever like push a sibling or a friend around in there.
100%.
Yeah.
When it wasn't filled with topsoil, it was filled with friends. Like, it just, I had to do a lot of yard work with my parents growing
up. And they're
up.
Not very well balanced either. No. So you would tip your friends over a lot.
And the topsoil. It sucks.
Right. Right.
But so, I don't know, like 20 miles an hour?
52 miles an hour.
No. Oh, no, absolutely not.
See, I read that and I was like, I seem slow.
Can you imagine how sketchy that would feel?
Why? They put like a frame on it and fat tires and every, like they basically made it into a kneeling motorcycle.
Oh, is this like when they set those like lawnmower speed records and it's essentially just like a drag go-kart with a lawnmower draped over it?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So I'm like, okay, like, congrats to the guy. I think the previous record was 46 miles an hour. But come on. Like, you know, the author of the article and the guy was like, man, these are, it might seem slow, but you do. It's like death-defying speeds. Like, this is crazy. We're cheating death. But every record holder says that, right? You read Alex Roy's book about the Cannonball record, and he would make you think that you're about to die at 30 hours from like hallucination and all this stuff. And it's because he doesn't want anyone to challenge a record. And then you go do it and you're like, oh, okay. Like, yeah, I was tired, but it's not that bad. So I think they're just trying to scare people off. Cause I feel like, you know, Michael Dunlop could just build one and be like, 150 miles an hour. Just destroy this wheelbarrow record.
Which, like, I also feel like, I mean, attaching a this is all interesting, and for people that want to chase this, that's fine. It feels a little disingenuous that they're attaching a motor to it. Like, a wheelbarrow does not have a motor by default. So I feel like the speed record should just be, like, hucking it down a hill or something, like, because you're essentially making a go-kart that has bad aerodynamics.
Or it should have to use, like, all the fundamentals of the wheelbarrow, right? So you just attach two wheels to the, like, little, you know, legs, and then you have to use the stock front wheel.
Yeah.
So it could go, like, any direction at any time.
Like, there's got to be, and it's got to be filled with something. Like, yes. You know, I don't, like.
Yeah, it should have to carry a load, for sure. Yeah.
Devin Ruckus in YouTube chat says, the wheelbarrow record is low enough that most of us backyard 400 racers could beat it with decent gearing.
Yeah. Well, speaking of Michael Dunlop, who I think should do this wheelbarrow record, this is a tip from Mason Dibley, an avid listener and sometimes technical contributor. He did the research on this, and we talked about Michael Dunlop a couple years ago, I think, on the podcast, because he had set a new record for the Isle of Man time trial. If you don't know what the Isle of Man is, I said this 2 years ago, I'll say it again, go look it up. It's the world's most dangerous and most exciting motorcycle race. It is around the Isle of Man. It's an island somewhere out in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean, I think it is, off the coast of Africa. And every year they have races there, and every year people die. But Mason Dibley did his research and said, for the first time since 1982 and only the second time in race history, the Isle of Man time trial race had zero deaths this year.
Wow.
There have been 103 meetings for this race since 1903, and 269 riders have died during the event's history, which Mason says is an extremely staggering statistic. With zero deaths this year, Michael Dunlop achieved his 29th victory on the Isle, setting a new record for the most wins by a single rider. His wins beat out Joey Dunlop, yes, it's related, who had 26. That guy is,
wow.
I think he's cheating.
So they only do this once a year, right? So that means this is like the 29th victory is over 29 years.
Well, no, because he could have, like, they have different classes.
Oh, okay.
So there's multiple races over the course of this week long race. I think it is.
Okay.
Yep. But anyway, I think he's cheating. That was a setup from before, in case you didn't realize that.
Oh.
Cheating death.
Ah, hey-o. Oh, wait, we gotta, I'm gonna.
That's not funny. This is real.
Wow.
This is serious. This is somber.
I'll do better, Doug. I'm sorry.
I mean, seriously, though, to run that many times and, literally not die. It's also interesting, too, that in the world of motorsports, and I do 100% agree with safety improvements for motorsports, not just for the professionals who decide to take the risks, but for the rest of us amateurs who want to go out to the track and have fun with less risk, you know, Hans devices and harnesses and, you know, crumple zones and carbon fiber and all the crazy stuff that has halos and stuff that have made racing more safe. The Isle of Man is just like, yeah, we don't care.
It is kind of crazy. I've been watching some old Top Gear because it's cozy and sometimes I want to turn my brain off. And they did a E46 M3 CSL video where they were on the Isle of Man and they're like, outside of towns, there's no speed limits. So they're just hooning and on like public roads, but they're not blocked off, nothing else. And it's like, it's just a wild place. I don't know if it's still like that. That video was probably made in like mid-2000s.
Probably is.
But to think that there's like essentially 2.5 people statistically that die every time they host this thing is wild.
Yeah.
And people still show up.
Maybe more people show up because of that, right? People say, well, people only watch NASCAR for the wrecks.
Man, that's crazy.
People only watch hockey for the fights. We are a masochistic society. We're trending towards Rome, right? Like they used to feed people to the lions. Be like, here, fight. And they'd pack out a coliseum.
Yeesh.
Did people ever win? I doubt it.
Yeah, not...
Right? So it's in our human nature to... weird. Speaking of racing, Willow Springs Raceway, iconic raceway under the same ownership since 1963, I think it was, is for sale for an undisclosed sum. The tax valuation is just above $2 million, but I'm sure the track will command a higher price than that. Or maybe not because of the inherent liability of it eventually getting shut down because it's in California. So at some point, even though it's out in the middle of nowhere now, then people will build houses nearby and then magically discover that there's a racetrack in their backyard that popped up just the other day and not like the noise and or the EPA concerns that come with a transfer of ownership. They may be grandfathered. You know, there's all sorts of fluids that are being spilt and tires being used for tire walls and stuff like that. It's not like old Nelson Ledges where the guys were taking money on the side to dump tires in the back. So you don't have that kind of shenanigans that require massive EPA cleanup. But it's still a racetrack. And, you know, that's a risky thing to buy. But I really, really hope somebody does. I hope they make it great. I hope they have a ton of money behind them, like, you know, the WeatherTech guys behind Laguna Seca and, you know, the owners of Road Atlanta, because they're probably going to need it. They're probably going to need it for it to sustain into the future. But it's a great track. I've run there a number of times. I hope that stays around.
Yeah, and it's something that, you know, I really hope we aren't entering an era where we're seeing a lot of these extremely historically important racetracks and also great to run tracks. Although, I mean, I've only done it in video games, but it's great in video games, too.
Well, the EPA can't shut your video game down.
They cannot. But I hope that this isn't, you know, I hope that this persists. And I hope somebody who's enthusiastic about it keeps it going, to put the money into it, to keep it going into the future. Because this is stuff that I hope I don't see this disappear in my lifetime.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. Let's go to a commercial and we'll come back with our main topic, which is negative reviews, how to deal with them, some of the great ones we've gotten. And
Switchcast is also brought to you by Celebrity Machines. Celebrity Machines offers more than 250 different screen-accurate license plates as they've appeared in movies and TV shows, such as Back to the Future, Ghostbusters, The Fast and the Furious, Breaking Bad, and so many more. Celebrity Machines also makes our dealer insert plates as well as our commemorative 2539 plates from the fastest cannonball run ever. Visit CelebrityMachines.com for more info and use promo code SWITCHCAST to save 25.39% at checkout. Has anybody checked that lately? Does that still work?
I don't know if it ever worked, but, you know, try it.
Yeah, give it a shot. Let us know. Science.
I know that one time it didn't work and somebody messaged Travis Bell, the fearless leader of Celebrity Machines, and he just gave him the discount.
Nice.
So it was fixed.
A spicy discount. I'm still surprised.
Yes. Well, they're very generous. So we're talking about negative reviews here. We received a couple in the last couple weeks at our dealership, but just in general, I think businesses are always dealing with this, not just car dealers. I think it might be more prevalent given the stereotypes of used car salesmen, but I think any retail facing service or sales industry is going to be constantly dealing with their online reputation. That is kind of how businesses live and die now. I think the biggest issue, at least for our company and maybe for others as well, is that more often than not, people do not come to us with an issue for us to resolve, but instead they talk behind our back. So we hear about things secondhand. For instance, somebody has posted on Bring a Trailer comments like, oh yeah, I heard these guys did this or that or whatever. And I'm like, who even are you and what are you talking about? Like, our business is not so big that I don't know or have some knowledge of just about every transaction that happens. And certainly I have knowledge of every problem that arises because I care about our reputation. I'm emotionally invested in this business. I care about my integrity, or at least, you know, the illusion of my integrity by everybody else. When I hear about stuff from other people, it really kind of just chaps my ass because I'm like, this is secondhand information. Why do you know about this and not me? Right. For instance, someone recently on Instagram said that they had heard of two issues in the last year and a half with our quote unquote guys. And I think this was in relation to our transport video. So he was talking about our transporters apparently caused some issues. I was like, what are you talking about? And so I replied, I'm like, that's funny. We haven't heard of these issues at all. So like, you know, what are you talking about? And then I said, but you know, I'd be happy to discuss this with you, set the record straight, whatever. Here's my phone number. Here's my email address. Please call me. And of course, he got bent out of shape and he's like, oh, well, you know, your second response was good, but, you know, your first response showed your true character. There's nothing funny about, you know, problems, and your cavalier attitude towards this shows the real type of man you are. And I was like, it wasn't ha-ha funny, but what I'm saying is exactly the same thing. It's like, if we haven't heard of these issues from the customer, they're not issues. And so then he went all like, oh, well, I'm not going to reduce myself to calling you. You don't deserve it, whatever. And I was like, that just shows me that you didn't actually have a real complaint. It's always when people like play this, like, I'm better than you, you don't deserve my call, whatever card, that I'm assured of my stance and I go, yeah, you didn't actually have a problem. You just heard things or wanted to say things on the internet, but weren't ready to back them up. Now, as a constant crap talker on the internet, my goodness, I have a podcast where we talk bad about people who may or may not deserve it. We try to fact check as much as we can before we say things. I'm certainly aware that this is a little bit of the pot calling the kettle black. But if somebody confronts me about it, I'll be happy to address it as well. And people have. And I said, great, let's dig into this even more because there's more. What we talk about on the podcast is typically the tip of the iceberg from the actual full information we have. I think that's something that every business deals with, right? We can't make something right if we don't know that something's wrong. That's really, really difficult. But then what do you do with actual bad reviews or problems when people come at you on the internet? And we've had a couple lately, and I struggle with this because I am snarky by nature. I'm incredibly sarcastic. and I'm not bound by any giant corporation or boss or anything. So I can be as politically incorrect as I want to, but that's a blessing and a curse. So recently we got a 1-star comment from a guy wanting to test drive a Diablo and an NSX. And he was coming from like North Dakota.
Was it cross-shopping those or something?
Right. Yeah. No, he was.
Interesting.
But he said, like, I'll give him props on the phone. He was like, you know, I'm looking at like 10 different cars, Audi R8, NSX, Diablo. I don't know what I want to buy, so I need to try all these cars out to see what I like. And I was like, okay, that's cool, but that's not what we do, right? Like, we have incredibly expensive insurance. It's very difficult to get. A lot of our cars aren't ours. They're consignment vehicles. So my job is to protect the vehicle for the consigner because it's their car until it isn't. And people don't understand that. They feel entitled. Like, well, it's because it's for sale. Like, I can just do whatever I want with it. It's like, no, it's our car. It's our insurance policy. It's our business on the line here. So I just, as politely as I could, kind of explain that philosophy to him and just said, you know, our policy is that test drives happen as a part of like contingency of sale. Like, I want to buy this car, but I need to drive it before I write the final check. Okay, now we're talking. And then he's like, wow, you know, but if somebody showed up with cash, like they brought a couple hundred grand cash, would you let them test drive? And I was like, that's not the point. I don't care about whether or not you have the money. I care about whether or not you're wasting our time. There's tons of people with tons of money who are time wasters. They're perpetual shoppers. And over 20 years of doing this, I've sniffed them out. And this guy on the phone was like, alarm bells going off. This guy's a shopper, right? So he left us a 1-star review, essentially like, well, if you like buying cars, like ordering pizza where you don't get to test drive them first, you know, don't go to them. They're rude. They're this, they're that, whatever. So I was like, well, I got options here. How do I respond to this?
Uh-oh. Did you respond?
I did respond. I did. Although I called the consigner and I was like, hey, can you leave us a review right after this and just thank us for not letting somebody test drive your car who was a tire kicker? Because I can't call him a tire kicker, but I like indirectly did. I was basically just reiterated our policy and said, you know, test drives are on a limited basis. They're for people ready to buy a car as a part of a contingency of sale. You know, we're not a Chevy dealer. Test drives, this isn't like product tryout. We don't have product demos here. We're a specialty car dealer. So that irked him and he changed his review.
Oh, does it show up as edited? Like, can you see
it
that?
It doesn't, but I took screenshots of both.
No way.
So he then said, because over the phone, he asked us like, well, what if somebody shows up with cash? He then said, as the second half of his review, you would think if you bring in over $150,000 in cash, you would be taken seriously and not labeled as a tire kicker. Ha ha, wow, very unintelligent group of sellers.
Oh.
So here we go. If you work at a big corporate dealership, you got to be PC when you respond. I don't. So where do you go with this, right? Well, what is, as a business, right, people want the business owner to be positive, be kind, be all these different things, I think. But I'm not so sure that's true. I think there's like two tacks to this. One is, let's be super nice, kind, professional. I don't know what professional means. As if like being sarcastic is unprofessional. But if somebody deserves it, then do you go for the throat? Do you let the snark out on Google reviews?
Personally, as somebody who would be potentially in the market to buy a car from a local high-end car dealer, I'd love to see it if they just lay into somebody. But that's probably not the best like professional thing to do. The best professional thing is probably just to lay out, here's the situation. What's really bugging me, because I'm looking at this right now, I had to go find it. The fact that they do not show that this review was edited is wild to me. Like, that is essential information for somebody right, looking at this review to know that if something is shady. Because if it is edited with a timestamp after your response, all credibility to that reviewer should be gone.
Unless I'm going to follow up on that because I've had two people update their reviews. So we're going to get to that in a moment because we're going to get to the results of this. And we're also going to talk about this. This leads into dealing with public facing auctions where there's comment sections or marketplace where there's comment sections.
Yeah, yeah.
So
I'm getting ahead of myself over here.
Right. So I basically just called him out on his lie because he didn't show up. He didn't bring cash. And I didn't label him a tire kicker. We had a very clear discussion. It was a very nice discussion. He just didn't like the answer that I gave him on the phone. And the interesting thing is this guy left two other dealers 5-star reviews thanking them for letting him test drive their car. So it like confirmed to me, I almost called him out on that. Like, see proof that this guy is just looking to drive everybody's cars. Maybe he will eventually buy. I'm not saying that. I'll never say... You know, kind of the boomer response on Marketplace, like, you're not a real buyer. You don't have any cars. You don't have any money. I will never, ever tell anybody that because I don't judge a book by its cover, and at least from customers. Transporters, absolutely. But customers, I won't do that, and I'll never, like, insult them personally. But it's about their character, right? Like, you can have all the money in the world and just perpetually shop, and that's not what we're here for. So I just called him out on the lie, and I said, this reviewer, DJ, unfortunately, is not telling the truth in this review. He's never been to our dealership and therefore has never shown up with $150K in cash. I explained that he called in wanting to test drive everything. I informed him of the policy. And then at the end, I said, a test drive is a contingency of purchase. We're very happy to accommodate them. And that's what we told DJ over the phone. But he did not like that answer, as it seemed like he wants to taste the cake at all the wedding venues before he even gets engaged. Think that's too spicy?
I mean, maybe a little too spicy, although I like it.
I posted that last night. I slept on it. I read it again. I'm like, I like it. So I don't know. I mean, I'm really curious what customers think of reviews like this, right? Because there's the old saying, the customer is always right. But what people forget is that saying is only half of it. The full saying is the customer is always right in matters of taste. And unfortunately, non-customers like this have taken only the first half of that statement and applied it to themselves and tried to use it as a weapon against businesses who refuse them service or won't give them the time of day or call them out on their BS when they leave negative reviews. And it's like, you know what? I think businesses have a right to do that. That's why I put the wall of shame on my website. I'm like, we need to be able to fight back. Now, if we're really in the wrong, I think businesses need to take 1-star reviews or feedback to heart. Absolutely. But I think good businesses should engender a culture such that the customer feels safe to address those issues and give you constructive criticism before it gets to the point of a bad review and address it with the person directly. And I wish all my customers would do that because I want to know before they leave me and go to somebody else because of something they didn't even tell me that I could fix or maybe not fix for them, but go, huh, I didn't think of that. Maybe that is a character issue or that is an operations issue or communication issue, and I can do this better the next time. I'd love to have that constructive criticism, and I think businesses need to create that culture such that you know, they get that feedback. And a good business at that point should almost only get 5-star reviews, not because they're perfect, but because they're resolving customers' issues and dealing with the stuff in real time.
Well, I know you've mentioned multiple times when we've talked about car dealers and your experience and similar subjects that you want your customers to have a good experience.
Yeah.
That is how you run an upstanding business. It's also how you get more customers.
Right.
So I don't think any business should be out to give people a bad experience. So you want to fix those. But sometimes, honestly, the customer's not right.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I'm not right all the time. Like, we sell used cars. Sometimes people have a crappy experience. Sometimes the cars break on their way home. And sometimes a customer feels that we should fix that, even though it's bought as is, even though we inspected it, even though we serviced it, even though we sent them service records, even though, right? Like, or maybe we didn't inspect it. I don't know. But the law is as is. And like, we can't foresee problems. You know, maybe we could be negligent in not addressing problems that we should have seen or know about, but we can't foresee that something might happen to break 10 miles later. There's an old saying, and this is only partially true, but it drives the point home that machines don't tell you when they're about to break. They tell you when they're broken.
Yeah.
It's not always true. Like a mechanic will poke all sorts of holes in that. But
well,
in general, it kind of is.
There's
you don't
layers.
Hear noises until it's almost too late.
Yeah, the noises, or maybe your head gasket is going or something. That's like mechanical things are generally fine.
Until they're not. Yeah.
You know, that as a 996 owner, the IMS is fine until it's not.
Right.
There will be no warnings. There will be no nothing.
Oh, but I have the magnetic oil filter.
It'll be filled with stuff when you drop the oil after it explodes.
Yeah. 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 So, yeah. Okay. So let's not go down too far down the as is road. But I think that there's a very good discussion as well that feeds over when you have this feedback in real time on auctions like Bring a Trailer, P-Car Market, and if you post in public groups or private groups or whatever, if you're listing on Marketplace, which is a very good strategy for selling your cars, don't just list it there, post it in relevant groups, join groups, whatever. But then you open yourself up to the commenters, especially in the Corvette buy sell trade group, where you will just get eaten alive. But Bring a Trailer is a great example because the peanut gallery there is brutal. We have a lot of people who will consign cars with us just because they don't want to deal with the peanut gallery. They can't. They're too emotionally connected with the car they're selling. So we, as a disconnected third party, can, you know, typically address it without emotion, but then enter me who gets snarky. I think Tyler, like your 968 that we represented for you is a great example. Some guy on there commented about the driving video and he's like, hey, there's this terrible noise when you go over the bump. Can you post a better video, you know, driving over lots of like on a bad road, lots of bumps, because, you know, it sounds like something's loose in the suspension. And I'm like, man, you're like tanking our auction here. You're not if there's actually an issue, but I watched the video again. I'm like, that's just the noise of a bump. Like a camera phone picks up every single noise and amplifies it. So then I go in and I look at his bid comment history, whatever, his profile history. He's been a member of Bring a Trailer for 3 to 4 years. He's never once bid on anything, but he has dozens, if not hundreds of comments. Almost all of them were very specific questions, picking a car apart, asking for detailed photos of this, that, whatever, asking nerdy questions, and never, ever, ever bidding. And everything in me wanted to just respond to him, you're not a real buyer, you're just a troll, I'm not answering your question. Everything in me.
It was, because I went through and I did the same looking you did, because I'm sitting there watching refresh and looking. I was like, what are you talking about? I watched the video 20 times and I dailied this car I was like, there's nothing. The suspension is great. And what I loved is he posted on another 968 that, again, a suspension noise. And he said, this doesn't exude the typical Porsche bank vault quality. So he doesn't know what he's talking about, because the 968s and 944s and 914s and all of the entry-level cars, the Boxsters, they're not bank vaults.
Heck, the 996s weren't
no,
bank vaults.
They never
you
have
shut
been.
The door, there's a rattle.
Yes. I'm like, this guy doesn't know what he's talking about.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but, I've taken the tack that I essentially I'll do intelligent jabs, but also answer the question. So I didn't attack this guy. I just answered the question. I'm like, there's no noise, but I'm like, I'm not filming another video for you because you're not a real buyer. I didn't say that. If he pushed the issue, then I would have actually called him out for not bidding. But you have to walk the line on Bring a Trailer of snark and politeness, because the issue is most bidders there don't comment. So they're watching the entire thing go down, and you can, you know, they're won or lost based on what goes down in the comment section more often than not.
I don't think any of the bidders, any of the serious bidders towards the end of my car commented anything.
Right.
And like one of them said something afterwards, but like that was it. It was just no participation other than the money, which is all that really matters. Let's be honest.
Fiduciary participation.
Yeah. And then they're gone.
Yeah. But that doesn't mean you can't be fun with it. I've had people come to me and say, we appreciate how you handle auctions, and they referenced an auction. I was like, oh, I was kind of snarky on that one. So there is a balance. I don't think that all the time it has to be just super pleasant, put on your sales cap. There's a fine line to be drawn. But anyway, I love to hear from you guys in the comment section how you deal with these types of things. Everybody has a different strategy. Whether you're a pizza shop or a car dealership or anything in between. We live and die by these reviews and by comments and online persona. So I've kind of picked my personality, and I gotta lay in the bed that I've made, but I'm owning it. So
well, but I think
don't come
did.
At me, bro.
I think you've done a good job in what I've seen of allowing some of that snark through, allowing other people reading your comments to realize that you're dealing with something unfortunate, and you're doing it because you should, to respond to a comment or a review or whatever.
Right.
But also, like, I'm noticing in the YouTube chat, everybody's kind of enjoying the fact that you're slightly snarky.
Well, there is one, and your 968 auction was hilarious because you had a bunch of friends who are car people who also knew the car that just kept coming. It was like the Tyler Sanders mafia, honestly. Like, no detractor in that auction had any chance.
No, they got whacked immediately.
There was one guy who deserved every bit of it, who basically brought up like, well, I don't get it. Why is a bid 150% of what the car sold for here in 2019? Like, I don't get it. And so everybody just jumped on him like, you're an idiot. This car is way better. It wasn't presented that well. The cars have gone up in value. And I just responded. I don't know what his point is here, but it needs to be nipped in the bud. And I just said, like, I don't know if you realize this, but in 2020 to 2023, we had record inflation. The government printed money, every single thing on the planet, from houses to interest rates to steak to cars, like, quadrupled in value. Like, are you really still asking the question why this car is worth more than in 2019? Like, people stopped asking that question for real in 2020-22, and the question was already old and tired and played out in 2021.
Yes.
Right? Like, this is 2024. So in that one, I kind of had to just be like, all right, you're done here.
And his name was
not relevant at all.
His name was the vintage car guy. You should know this. Things appreciate. The market has changed. This isn't news.
Yeah.
Like, what? And that comment also didn't contribute anything.
Correct.
It was like trying to stir something up.
Right. Right.
For
it's one thing
reason.
If they're addressing something with the car or with the seller particularly that needs to be addressed, whether or not it's a legitimate question or a trolling question. But back to the reviews, though, the tactic of calling somebody out on their inaccuracies in the review did actually work for me.
Ooh.
At least once. So a guy had left me a 1-star review. He called me on a Panos Roadster, basically gave me a comp of another car for sale. And I was like, dude, I'll buy that right now. Like, I'm not reducing my price to that because I will buy that one and then mark it up. Like,
this ain't Best Buy, bro.
Which buyers hate hearing that line. That line should not be used by any car salesman. It doesn't work. It's standoffish. Don't use that. Even if it's true, it's kind of like saying, I have another offer for X. Buyers either don't care or they think you're lying. So it doesn't work. But I used it anyway because I'm just like, yeah, no, that's not a comp. And then I looked up the comp and it was like 3 years old. I was like, that's not a real comp. So the guy left me a bad review. And I think I had emailed him about another car that was higher mileage that was within the price he had offered. I'm like, here you go. Here's another car in your price range that you want to be at. And so he left me a 1-star review and said I was standoffish, blah, 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 whatever. And I responded. I was like, this review isn't truthful. Here's the facts of the review. He called me, used a comp that was 3 years old. Like, yes, I told him I'd buy that car. I wasn't like super polite about it. I deserved a 2-star for being short with him, but you know, there's a reason for it. And he updated his review to a 4-star and thanked me for like finding, like sending him another car and like gave a truthful review.
Oh, seriously?
Seriously.
Whoa. Okay.
And I like went back and forth on that. Like, how do I respond to this? And I'm like, no, this review isn't truthful. Was I super nice and pleasant on the phone? No. Was I right? Yes.
Well, I think it's okay that like, you know, you can acknowledge that maybe you weren't the nicest, most flowery version of yourself that day to give them the best customer service, but also...
Listen, even the nicest, most flowery version of myself is typically wilting, so...
That's what the whiskey's for. You know, it's... people got to understand, like, if you can't have people come... imagine you have, like, 10 people a day come to you with 3-year-old comps, like, bah, I'm trying to buy this car for that. Like, that's going to get on your nerves, and it's not real. So, like, there's a human element to this, too, that, like, you can't put up with that.
Or we had one guy. I will never deal with this guy because of his dishonest negotiation. He was trying to buy a manual Murcielago years and years ago when it was a $160,000 car. And he kept sending me comps to justify his $120,000 asking price. And I was like, those aren't manuals. Those are e-gears. That doesn't count. And so then he would like circle the part where it's listed as a 6-speed manual. And I'm like, with the Lamborghinis, they're all 6-speed manuals, quote unquote. They're either automated manuals or they're manual manuals. It's the same gearbox. It's just a matter of who is moving the shift lever and the clutch. And I'm like, but if you actually clicked on the listing and looked at the photos, they were e-gears. Just because they're listed as manuals doesn't make them manuals. And I'm like, you know that. I know you know that because you've already looked at the listings and discounted the cars. You're just trying to play me as stupid. So that guy thankfully did not leave a review for us because he would have gotten lit up. There is a lot more to that story, too. A lot more to that story. But we're running out of time, so we're not going to go down that one. Really quickly, he posted everywhere online on all the social media that he was buying the car. Like everybody was texting me that knew both of us. It was like, oh man, I hear that guy's buying your car. He's going to twin turbo it. He's going to drive it on the Recharge Rally, all this stuff. And he hadn't even come to an agreement with us. He was still lowballing us and like insulting us, picking apart the condition of the car. And we're like, these are all things we told you. And then when we didn't take his offer, he changed his tune and, you know, just bleh on everywhere online the same way he did about buying the car, about how like, you know, the car wasn't that good. I'm not buying it because of this, this and that reason. And I'm like, screw you, man. That's so dishonest.
People, that's just clout chasing. They like, well, they want people to know they're trying to buy a 100%. Mercy. Oh, I'm going to twin turbo and I'm going to take it on a rally. I'm going to burn.
This guy also posted pictures of cash on his Instagram showing like what he was going to pay his employees if they reached a certain like, you know, milestone for the year or something like that. I'm like, that's such BS manipulation.
Ooh, yeah. Don't like that.
Right? Like, this isn't money you paid your employees. This is like dangling a carrot, but it's not like you're putting it on social media to make yourself look better.
Yeah. No, there's literally no benefit to the people he's actually saying he's going to help there.
And get this.
Oh.
He openly is a Christian, and this is why I hate doing business with other Christians who like spew it out there that I'm a Christian because of all this crap. And I'm like, you put this out there and then you do these manipulative things to other people. And I'm like, that is bad business. It's bad business. And it gives the other Christians who are just quietly doing good business and being honorable a really bad name. Sorry, we went down a rabbit hole there. Anyway. Cool.
Is it time for the props and flops?
It is,
Doug?
Time for the props and flops,
which are brought to you as always by Switch Cars. Switch Cars is the enthusiast dealership where we buy, sell, consign, service, and store only cars that we like ourselves. So check out our handpicked inventory at the fresh and squeaky clean new switchcars.com. And our pick of the week from Switch Cars inventory this week is what?
2008 BMW E90 M3 in super rare Interlagos blue.
Rare.
48,000 miles, rod bearings done, 6-speed manual, and it is clean.
I'm imagining those old timey used car adverts, clean, 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 with like the 90s explosion word clouds.
Wacky waving inflatable arm flailing tube man. Exactly. Wacky waving inflatable arm flailing tube man.
Rod bearings, rod bearings, rod bearings. They're done. That doesn't mean they're a problem. They're done.
There's no IMS in this POS. You can drive it home today. Well, flop of the week is related to this E90 M3.
Uh-oh.
Tyler, you asked for more gatekeeping in the car scene.
Oh, I did.
You got it.
Yes, let's go.
I got gatekeeped.
Oh, did you?
I did.
I don't know if I meant that kind of gatekeeping, but tell me.
Apparently, this rare color E90 was not special enough to be let into Cars and Coffee Cleveland.
What?
I'm serious. I got the lot full
thing.
So I went and parked on a side street. And then came back and toured the full lot to see what was so much cooler than any color, really, BMW E90 M3, lest I think it's special because of the color. And here's a list, and let me, before I say this, Crown Acura, where it was hosted, was a wonderful host. We love the people over there, great dealership, good people, but the people running the Cars and Coffee itself were a little gatekeepy. Yeah.
Okay. This is not the kind of gatekeeping I want.
Here's the list of cars that were absolutely definitely better than an E90 Classic M3.
Hit me.
BMW 6 Series Convertible in Old Man Tan.
Ugh.
Pontiac Grand Am Ram Air V6.
Ooh.
Kia Stinger.
God. This is just inventory for
Mustang
that dealer.
GT.
Well, there's probably 12 of those.
Stanced Honda Civic Si.
Six of those.
Stanced Acura TSX wagon. Actually, there was
somebody
like
stanced
eight,
a wagon.
Well, there's like eight stanced cars that all came in after me that they're like, oh yeah, we'll make room for you guys.
100%.
BMW 3 Series wagon. Another Mustang GT. Dodge Challenger, not like a 70s one, like new one.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
You could get a rental lot. A Ford Mustang V6 with a giant wing.
Heck yeah. Was it like the newer style?
No, it was like the 2005-ish.
Oh, like New Edge?
Yeah.
The big wing? Heck yeah.
160,000 miles and a bad Carfax, too. Yes, yeah. I ran the plates. BMW 335i. A Kia Forte GT.
Oh, that's a lease.
Mazda NC Miata. Not a Mazda Speed. A Mazda ND Miata. And the final boss of cars that are cooler at Cars and Coffee than an E90 M3. Volkswagen GLI.
No. Was it at least in a cool color? Was it like the orange?
Nope. It's white. The hood was up. I don't know if they were trying to display their mods or if the car was broken.
It's probably they had to check engine light on the way in. I got problems that nobody who's listening cares about, but that is why I don't like modern Cars and Coffees. That is the wrong type of gatekeeping because they're letting all their bros in and their friends with like crap, not crap. They're with like whatever their cars are. They're not as, you know, whatever. I don't know. Different tastes, I guess.
I think it should be renamed from Cars and Coffee to Traffic and Tea. Pedestrians and pastries.
Ooh, yeah.
Commoners and caffeine. At some points, I wasn't sure where their used car lot ended and the car show began. The line was
when you
so
started,
blurry.
That was just inventory. The first right. three things were just used inventory.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yikes.
Oh, man. Well, it's why the Ferraris don't show up anymore.
Yeah. It's a wonder, isn't it?
Right. Like, yeah. These people are entitled to love cars. I'm not saying that they can't love their car. It's just when you go to a car show, people want to see show cars. They want to see cool stuff. This is not cool. Sorry. Sorry. Said it. It's not cool.
Yeah. It's
so.
And that's where I think I was going. I said a lot of things about my personal opinions about some of those vehicles, but like I want people to love cars. That just feels ugh.
Yeah.
Like of all things.
Yeah. Our prop of the week. Ferrari, of which there were none at Cleveland Cars and Coffee.
Hey-o.
There might have been one. I think somebody showed up in a 458 or something and stayed for a little bit. But they were, the people were lining the streets afterwards with their video cameras waiting for people to, you know, like take off properly.
Well, you said there were some Mustangs and Challengers in there.
Right, yeah.
So some stuff was going to happen.
Yeah, they should have been wearing knee pads and like hockey gear and stuff on the side of the road there. I had to do the super drive of shame, though, because I left. And then I came back because Erin forgot her water bottle, and then I had to leave again.
Oh no!
It's like I'm not doing the drive-by. Not, it's not why I'm doing this. Ferrari is committed to preserving its iconic V12 engine. This is from Engine Patrol, with the new 12-cylinder supercar showcasing its dedication. Okay, not great at names, but they are preserving the 12-cylinder. The company plans to continue producing naturally aspirated V12s until regulations intervene. Despite acknowledging the efficiency of turbocharged V8 engines, Ferrari sees emotional value in its V12 offerings. Darn yes. Right. They are going to keep making them until they are forced not to. Thank you, Ferrari. Also, thank you, Aston Martin. I think we mentioned them a couple weeks ago for doing the same thing. So here we go. There's a lot of other manufacturers investing more in ICE cars like Volkswagen. We'll cover that some more on upcoming episodes. But maybe the tide's turning just a little bit.
Well, and
just
I think
a little bit.
Ferrari and Aston Martin, they're not the ones that are causing a problem. So
that is correct.
Let's go after the problem. Let's go after where things can be improved, but not get rid of the passion that so much of us, such correct. A small niche part of the world feels. Don't right. why take that away from us?
Right. I won't get political here, but there's the constant debate about the Electoral College, right? Like that, you know, we have a concentration of voters in cities that have different political needs that are voting for the nation, right? And so you have the rural people going, these regulations don't work for us. We have a different lifestyle. We have different economy. That's tougher to do with overall laws and regulations, but I feel like absolutely for the EPA and for car regulations, they should be separate, right? Like there is a solution for Los Angeles and New York City and Chicago that is totally different than the solution for the rest of the country, right? EVs aren't practical for the rest of the country. They're very practical for inner city. And eliminating smog in a concentrated area is a great thing. But, you know, overall vehicle emissions don't, you know, move the needle on our pollution. And CO2 isn't even a bad thing. People keep quoting it as if it's, you know, the end of the world. It's CO is a bad thing. CO2 is not. CO2 actually helps plants out. It's food for plants. Anyway, going down a crazy thing. But like, yeah, let's do EVs in New York City, in California. Absolutely. 100%. Great. Let's make commuter cars that are emissions free from a tailpipe perspective. But let's work on other sustainable solutions for the rest of the country, for the rural areas, and not worry about the niche markets. And let's not worry about the tuners and the few people ripping cats off their cars in Iowa or whatever. Doesn't matter. Okay.
I will say, Brian James in YouTube chat, great idea. This is just in time for gate-kept switch cars and coffee. We can make our own rules.
I totally forgot to mention it. Thank you, Brian. We are having the switch cars open house and car display, right? Bring your sweet car July 31st. This came about by accident, thanks to, I think, Baltimore Cars and Coffee, because we accidentally posted our January 31st one as July 31st. And we're like, all right, screw it. We'll have one July 31st. So July 31st, Wednesday, 4 p.m., we will have an open house at Switch Cars. All are welcome. Most are welcome.
yeah, there's gatekeeping.
People and cars. There's, yes. Right. So please come out, bring an interesting and cool car. If it's not interesting and cool, you're still welcome. Just don't try to back it into a primo spot and convince other people that it is interesting and cool. There's just, you know, no discrimination here, just discretion. We will also have a fantastic barbecue company. We stole them from, they were at Cleveland Cars and Coffee, and they were really amazing. The name of the company is, somewhere here, Black Kettle Barbecue. We're going to have them here dishing out food, and I think we'll do a live Q&A special podcast that evening as well, because it is a Wednesday. So please mark it on your calendars, Wednesday, July 31st. That brings us to the end of our regular show. If you're watching live, stick around for Tip Talk afterwards, and we appreciate you being with us and listening to our show. Thank you to Tyler Sanders, to our producer, Ethan Huffnagel. Thank you to our sponsors, Boxcast, Nuts for Sticks, Switch Cars, Celebrity Machines, Parallel Printworks, and Stephen Holm Woodworking. Our bumper music is provided by Emily and Ivory. You can stream their full album on Spotify or SoundCloud. This episode will be available next Monday in audio format wherever you listen to podcasts. Check out switchcast.live to get up-to-date information on our podcast, join our mailing list, and find out the best place to download the audio podcast. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next Wednesday at 8 p.m. as we look forward to edifying, educating, and entertaining you on the drive of your life.